Hello, I'm Maria Titizian, and this is The Week in Review. Every week, we bring you the story shaping Armenia and the region, from politics and policy to social issues and conflict. We break down the news and what it means for you. This week in the news, a major rift erupts inside the Armenian Apostolic Church. Wildfires across several regions have been contained, and Armenian civil society representatives visit Baku for a second round of dialogue with Azerbaijani counterparts. These stories and more in our weekly roundup of the news. A major rift has opened inside the Armenian Apostolic Church as a group of senior bishops publicly condemned Catholicos Karekin II this week, accusing him of covering up a scandal involving one of the church's highest-ranking clerics. A letter signed by close to 10 archbishops, including influential and controversial figures such as Navasart Gechoyan, head of the Araradian Diocese, and Hovnan Derderian of the Western Diocese of North America, circulated online on November 27. In the letter, the bishops urged fellow clergy and the faithful to help cleanse the church of what they called sacrilege, saying the Catholicos mishandled accusations linked to leaked intimate video allegedly showing Archbishop Arshak Khachaturian, the church's chancellor. Senior government officials quickly amplified the letter on social media. It was first posted by an outlet close to Prime Minister Nikol Pashinyan's circle, then shared by Pashinyan's chief of staff, Araik Harutyunyan, and Deputy Parliament Speaker Ruben Rubinyan, both signaling support for the dissenting bishops. The controversy stems from the video published back on October 25, which appeared to validate accusations Pashinyan has repeatedly leveled against the church about vows of celibacy. The Catholicos created a commission to investigate the footage, but the commission was later dissolved, a decision that triggered the bishops' public revolt. Pashinyan met with 8 of the senior bishops who signed the letter on Thursday evening, thanking them for what he described as their principled position. The Mother See has not issued an official response, but Asorik Garabedian, a high-ranking church official, condemned the group of bishops in a social media post, calling them oath-breaking and treacherous. This confrontation comes just days after the church itself publicly warned of divisions, convening an assembly of bishops that condemned priests who had recently omitted the Catholicos' name during liturgy, calling the act reprehensible and a potential cause of schism. And now, at time of this podcast recording, a session of the Supreme Spiritual Council, the highest decision-making body of the church, is currently taking place in Echmiadzin. And last Sunday, Prime Minister Nikol Pashinyan attended Mass in the village of Ararat with several senior officials and political ally Aram Sarkisian, head of the Republic Party, who hails from that village. For the last several weeks, Pashinyan has been attending Mass at different churches in Yerevan and the regions. This week, large-scale wildfires raged in several regions of Armenia, mostly concentrated in the northern province or region of Davush. On Thursday evening, Armenia's Rescue Service declared large-scale wildfires fully contained following an intense week of firefighting operations that swept through forests and grassland areas in Kerarkunik, Lori, Shirak, Godaik, Arakatzodun, and Sunik regions between November 21 and 27. Across the affected regions, more than 2,700 personnel from the Rescue Service, the Ministry of Environment's Eco Patrol Service, police units, local and state authorities, community volunteers, 65 primary and approximately 260 support vehicles, as well as Ministry of Defense helicopters, which conducted 109 sorties for aerial reconnaissance and water drops, were mobilized in a coordinated response. Authorities pointed to unusually dry and windy late autumn weather as fueling multiple blazes. The investigative committee said it will open criminal cases only if it receives a formal report of suspected arson or negligence. None has been filed so far. In a tragic development, the Ministry of Internal Affairs confirmed that a fatal accident occurred on November 26, while firefighters were responding to the ongoing wildfires in Davush. A service vehicle from Vanatsor was involved in a serious crash, resulting in the death of Sergeant Daron Simonian, while 4 other rescuers or first responders were injured in the same same incident and are receiving medical treatment. Yerevan is once again grappling with alarming levels of air pollution after atmospheric dust in the city's central district exceeded safe limits by up to 4 times over the past week. According to the Hydrometeorology and Monitoring Center, dust concentrations in downtown Yerevan were above permissible levels every day between November 17 and 25. The surge is linked to stagnant weather patterns across the Ararat Valley. With turbulent air movements coming to a halt, pollutants have remained trapped over the capital instead of dispersing. Mayor Dikran Avinyan acknowledged the problem, noting that the pollution spike is part of a broader seasonal pattern affecting the valley. He said the situation is driven largely by geography and stagnant air circulation, dry and dusty air masses, and Yerevan's basin-like topography, but is made worse by heating, fires, and open burning in winter months. He promised City Hall will soon announce long-term mitigation measures. At a cabinet meeting, Prime Minister Pashinyan announced the establishment of 2 new interagency task forces to address the persistent problems of air pollution and traffic congestion in the capital. One will focus exclusively on Yerevan's air pollution, documenting the problem, conducting a comprehensive assessment of all causes, and developing concrete, actionable solutions. On the second, will tackle the capital's long-standing traffic congestion. And now moving on to other news, 5 Armenian civil society representatives traveled to Baku this week for a 2-day visit, marking the second round of Armenian-Azerbaijani NGO dialogue since the Washington Accords. The Armenian government paid for a charter flight from Yerevan, while Azerbaijan covered local expenses. Armenian delegates said their request to visit Armenian prisoners being held in Azerbaijan was excluded from the program and effectively rejected, though they raised the issue again in a meeting with presidential advisor Hikmet Haji. According to delegation member Arek Kochinyan, Hajiev asked them to relay several messages to Armenian society, including that the war is over for Azerbaijan, that Azerbaijan wants long-term peace and has no territorial claims against Armenia. Azerbaijani participants told Azerbaijani press agency APA News that both sides agreed to call the initiative the Bridge of Peace. Discussions reportedly focused on media cooperation, joint fact-checking, neutral terminology, unblocking transport links, including rail through the Azerbaijani exclave of Nakhichevan, border delimitation in uncontested areas, and civil society's role in supporting a future peace treaty. The visit followed an earlier Azerbaijani trip to Yerevan back in October. And Parliament Speaker Alen Simonyan said the government is continuing efforts to secure the release of Armenians still held in Azerbaijan. He noted the number of confirmed detainees has dropped from nearly 200 after the 2020 war to 23 today, including 8 former Artsakh leaders. Simonyan also reiterated his willingness to visit Azerbaijan when the time is right. Prime Minister Nikol Pashinyan says the government is weighing 2 options for the future of the Electric Networks of Armenia, ENA, after regulators revoked the company's operating license last week. Speaking during a televised meeting with ENA's interim manager, Romanos Bedrosyan, Pashinyan said the preferred scenario is full nationalization of the power distribution infrastructure, followed by contracting a professional private operator to manage the system under a concession agreement and strict state oversight. This means the infrastructure becomes state property and is managed by a professional company, of course under the control of the government, Pashinyan said. If nationalization proves too costly, the prime minister said the government would turn to a second option, selecting a new private investor through an open tender. In either case, he emphasized that any transfer of ownership, whether to the state or a new operator, would require significant compensation to ENA's current owner, Dashir Capital, the holding company of jailed Russian-Armenian billionaire Sambel Garabedian. Armenia is preparing to shorten its compulsory military service. The Parliamentary Defense Committee has unanimously approved a government bill reducing mandatory service from 24 months to 18. Defense Minister Surem Babikian said the change will apply only to new conscripts starting in the winter 2026 draft and will not affect those already serving. He stressed that the timeline was set after the general staff confirmed it would not weaken border security or overburden current personnel. Meanwhile, the head of Parliament's inquiry into the 2020 Nagorno-Karabakh war says parts of the commission's long classified final report will eventually be released. Antranik Kocharyan said non-sensitive sections will be declassified over time and journalists will be given access to help explain the findings to the public. Republic. The commission completed its work last year, but the opposition boycotted it, accusing the government of using the process to whitewash military and political failures. In other defense news, Parliament's European Integration Committee has endorsed an agreement allowing Armenia to take part in EU crisis management missions. Deputy Foreign Minister Menatsagan Safarian said the deal, signed in June, will deepen cooperation with the EU in security and defense. It opens the door for Armenia to join any of the EU's 20 ongoing civilian and military missions, including the EUMA monitoring mission already deployed in Armenia. This week, Armenia Central Electoral Commission officially confirmed the final results of the Vagharshabad municipal elections held on November 16. The ruling Civil Contract Party emerged as a clear winner, securing a majority of the seats. In the new 33-seat council, it will hold 19 seats, while two opposition parties and blocs will have 14 seats. The Victory Alliance, that includes the ARF, will have 12 seats, while Mother Armenia, 2. And Armenia's opposition brought the issue of political prisoners to Parliament this week, holding hearings that the ruling Civil Contract Party refused to attend. Prosecutor General Anna Vartabedian also declined to appear, citing workload. Opposition factions Armenia Alliance and I Have Honor presented a draft declaration claiming that democracy in Armenia is in retreat and alleging that roughly 60 detainees meet the Council of Europe's definition of political prisoners based on a 2012 PACE resolution. The ruling party firmly rejects the accusation. During committee discussions, civil contract MPs argued that no credible international organization has identified political prisoners in Armenia and dismissed the opposition's claims as politically motivated. And Armenia's Deputy Foreign Minister Vahan Gostanyan wrapped up a two-day visit to Israel, saying political consultations there were constructive. According to the foreign ministry, the two sides discussed ways to give new momentum to bilateral cooperation, focusing on high-tech, medicine, agriculture, and tourism. They also exchanged views on regional developments. Israeli media, citing a diplomatic source, reported that Israel is seeking what it called a measured rapprochement with Armenia. And in other diplomatic news, Estonia has announced it will open a new resident embassy in Armenia in 2026. The decision was conveyed during a phone call between Armenia's foreign minister and his Estonian counterpart. Mirzoyan, the foreign minister, welcomed the move, calling it an important step in strengthening bilateral ties. And as always, about the articles that we published this week, and this week it was all about SALT, our lifestyle magazine. It was the November issue, and we have a lot of really interesting and sometimes frustrating articles about the situation of certain things in Armenia. The first is Welcome to the Rental Hunger Games. This is by Ella Kanakerian Berberian, and it's a comedic but rather dark dive into Yerevan's incomprehensible rental market, where outrageous prices and so-called designer homes and Soviet-era domiks collide with everyday despair of tenants just trying to find a livable space. Definitely worth the read, especially if you're looking to find a rental in the capital city. And the next one by Maria Gunko is one of our columnists, and she occasionally also contributes to our lifestyle magazine, and her piece is called Gond in Autumn Rain, and it's a walk through this, one of Yerevan's oldest neighborhoods during an autumn drizzle, and for her it becomes a sensory meditation of the neighborhood with all of its histories and reality and the fragile beauty. It's a very lovely piece, and it explores how rain can transform mood, revealing both charm and unresolved uncertainties. The next one, a first-time contributor, Elitsa Barhudarian, and it's called When Eating is a Gamble, The Story of Celiacs in Armenia. This is a piece that she was very passionate about writing because she has people in her life who have celiac disease, and she understood intimately how difficult it is to find, food sometimes in the city. So this low awareness, limited gluten-free options make life with celiac disease a daily struggle. And she reveals how every meal can feel like a gamble and how a small community is fighting for understanding their well-being and change. And speaking of health, another first-time contributor that I'm really happy has joined us, Dr. Mariam Manugyan. It's called Health in the Age of Dr. Google, and it's, you know, she's been a practicing physician for decades. And so she gives some really cool advice. And she writes, you know, in a world overflowing with online health advice, she tries to help readers separate the noise from knowledge. And, you know, it's a blend of medical insight with personal experience. And really, for her, it's all about preventive medicine, how to have a healthy lifestyle to prevent disease and support long, healthy living. And a piece that we published today by Datevik Avedisyan, who I'm glad is back on our pages, it's called Studio Shu and the Pursuit of Vivid Minimalism in Public Spaces. It's about designer Shushan Khachaturian and her Studio Shu. And it's an architecture studio, and it's reshaping public and retail design from Milan to Yerevan. She uses bold colors, local craftsmanship, and a philosophy that she calls vivid minimalism. So it's forging a new design language, and Datevik filed this report from Milan, so do check it out. And that's the kind of week we've had here in Armenia and the articles that we've published. So have a safe and peaceful weekend, and we'll be back again next week.